Right, and warm greetings to everyone. Right, okay. There's Eleanor, right, and Robert Lou, very nice to see you. Thank you very much for joining this busy time. So in the Sedra this week, we're going to be learning a discourse that the Rebbe said in 1984, which is not edited by the Rebbe. And in the Sedra this week, we have the Ten Commandments, which there's a beautiful lead up to the Ten Commandments. Then we actually have the Ten Commandments. And so what we can see on the screen is the actual text of the Ten Commandments. God spoke all these words, all these Ten Commandments, saying, I am God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. You shouldn't have any idols. And it goes into details about that. You shouldn't bow down to them. And then it says you shouldn't take the name of God in vain. Or as it puts it here, don't swear falsely by God's name. Then it's got the law of Shabbat. The seventh day is Shabbat because God made the heavens and the earth in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. Right, we're all familiar with this. Honor your father and mother. Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, which the sages explain means kidnapping. Don't give false witness against your neighbor. Don't desire the house that your neighbor has, his wife, his servants, his maidservant, his ox, his donkey, anything your neighbor has. So that idea of not coveting things that don't belong to us. And then we have the verse with which the discourse begins. And all the people could see the thunder, the et halapidim, and the flames, the et kol hashofar, and the sound of the shofar, the et ha ashen, and they could see the mountain smoking. The yaham, and the people saw this, the yanu, and they were shaken, the yandu mirachok, and they stood far off. So that's what the discourse is starting off with, and it's going to ask, why is there this sort of tremendous emotional or dramatic dimension? The thunder, the lightning, the shofar, the flames, the mountain smoking. Why is that part of the whole experience? And it comes to a very beautiful perspective on what is taking place at the giving of the Torah. So in order to help us take in these spiritual teachings, let's see if we can get the melody of the discourse. For some reason it didn't work last time, but let's see if we can hear it this time. So I'm going to go
out. I think we'd all rather you sing it.
All right. Okay, so Rabbi Lou will help. Hi, Sarah. Nice seeing you. Yeah. And Chesed and Rivka. And Eve. Ha yedidamba, ya 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 yedidamba Okay, so now we're going to try and share the screen of the discourse. One second, that's not so easy as it sounds. Just got to find that. I think this is it. Yes. No. Wrong one. Sorry. No. Sorry. Yep, okay. And now I'm sharing the screen, hopefully. Wait, there might be a problem. Let me just check if that's right. Yes, it is. Okay. Right. So there we have it. So this was the discourse said on the 17th of Shvat in 1984 on Shabbat, which was Parshat Yitro. So today has been the Monday was the 15th of Shvat, and today is the 16th of Shvat. So tonight, now, it's the 17th of Shvat. V'chol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot. The whole people could see the thunder. And interestingly, the Midrash points out that we could see that which is normally heard, and hear that which is normally seen. And there's a beautiful discussion of this by the Rebbe. And I think it's in the book Torah Studies, if I'm not mistaken, which means it's on Chabad.org. So Chabad.org will carries the various translations of the Rebbe's teachings, and I think that that's there as well. The whole idea of seeing that which is normally heard. So they saw the thunder and the flames, Vetaha Ashen, and the mountain smoken. Vayaham, and the people saw it, Vayanu, they were very shaken, Vayamdu mirachok, they stood afar off. So the Rebbe says, Vayadu hadiyuk v'zeh, now it's well known, the question about this, Bidrushei Rabboteinu Nisiyenu, in the discourses of the previous Rebbein. So, the Rebbe is the seventh Chabad Rebbe, beginning with Rabbi Schneur Zalman. And so his teachings relate back, usually, they relate back to the teachings of the earlier Rebbeim. And usually the Rebbe takes it to some sort of further level. So in some sense. So it is no point that's made in the earlier teachings of Chabad. The Gamba Dibuha Matchil Zeh, and also in the discourse beginning with these same words. Hi, Glory. The discourse beginning with these same words, Shenema Lifnei Mea Shana, which was said 100 years before. So 100 years before 1984 was 1884. And then the Rebbe Rashab, Reb Sholem Dovber, the fifth Rebbe, shortly after his father had passed away, said a discourse beginning with these same words. And the question that these earlier discourses ask is, the tzarich lahavin, we have to understand, mau inyan hakolot halalu, what is all this about thunder? What is all this tremendous drama? Surely the commandments, which we were commanded at the giving of the Torah, I mean, the giving of the Torah included the whole Torah in some sense. But what was actually said by God and repeated by Moses and communicated to the people Hem dvarim pshutim. They're very straightforward things. Kamo lo titzach. Don't murder. Lo tanebe. Don't give false witness. These are basic laws of civilized society. Shehem dvarim pshutim. These are simple ideas, very basic, very important, but very simple. That even if we hadn't been commanded by God to do them, it would be fitting to do them, to carry them out. As our sages point out, they say in Tractate Eidovin, if, God forbid, if the Torah had not been given, we would learn modesty, the concept of modesty, from cats, because cats are very modest creatures. There are other creatures which aren't modest, but cats are very modest. So we would learn the concept of modesty from a cat. So now this is actually rather an interesting statement, because the Rebbe has said at other times that it's quite clear that we need to have even the simplest concepts, such as don't murder, we need to have that as a statement from God. Because if we take it just as a human statement that human reason can work out, well, using human reason, one could work out all kinds of problematic, one could reach all kinds of problematic conclusions which aren't true at all. We might think that abortion should be easily available. We might think euthanasia should be easily available. We might think, as the Germans did, and the Rebbe talked about this in a very interesting talk, the country which was distinguished for its philosophical study of ethics, where Kant was a supreme philosopher respected by everyone, and including the Nazis themselves, who took on board his categorical imperative very assiduously. In that country, there was the whole sanctity of life was completely demolished, and they killed Jews, other people, and Germans themselves, for that matter, the euthanasia program that the Germans had against their own people. So it would seem that these might be simple statements, but they still need to have a divine affirmation in order to make them stick. However, the way this discourse takes it is we're looking at it in a different way. And a discourse is like a journey. And we are led on the journey by the Rebbe who's giving the discourse. One can ask this question, one can ask that question. But the Rebbe is trying to communicate something else to us, something that isn't obvious to us. And so that's what we are trying to explore together. Now, so he's quoted from the Rebbe Rashab, that discourse of 1884 of the Rebbe Rashab. And the Rebbe refers back to this discourse. The Hine B'mayma Hanal, now in that discourse, shall quote Kedushas Admor Mor Hashab of the Rebbe Rashab, Reb Shalom Dabbeh. He passed away in 1920. Nishmato Eden, his soul's in the Garden of Eden. In that discourse, Mamshich, he continues. V'im noma, if you say, the Marsh and its devil al zeh, the fact that they were commanded this, hu mipnei shegadol hametzuveh ve'oseh, mimi she'enu metzuveh ve'oseh. Now, there's a concept we find a number of times in the Talmud, and in Jewish thought, that it is greater to be commanded by God and then doing something, rather than doing it without being commanded by God. So there are various laws that if a person might feel, I want to keep that law, and they do it, but they're actually not commanded to do it. So even if they get some kind of reward for doing it, nonetheless, it's not as great as if when they are commanded to do that. Now, we might have a question on that, because we might think, surely, if you're doing it without being commanded by God, isn't that a greater thing? Isn't that a more precious thing? But we have to understand the idea of a command. A command in Hebrew, mitzvah, comes from the root tzivah, which means command. But also, Hasidic teachings explain, it comes from the word savta, which means connection. A command is a connection with God. So when we have a mitzvah to do X or Y, that means that doing X or Y creates a real connection with God. It's not just that we are a very sensitive person or a very spiritual person or something like that. There's a tangible connection with God which is being established by doing that mitzvah. You might say like an electrical connection. Yes, you have wires in a whole system, and there's a switch which in effect is joining two wires together. And when those two wires connect, then there's current flowing through the whole system. So any mitzvah is doing that. There's this, it's something very, very profound and powerful. So the Rebbe Rashab says, we might think that this is why there's such a drama around the Ten Commandments, because it could be that before we were keeping something like the Ten Commandments out of a kind of natural law, or even the seven Noahide laws are also laws from God, which overlap to a certain extent, the Ten Commandments, to a considerable extent. Mikol makom, nonetheless, adayin eina muvan, which still not understood, ma'in yana kolot v'arash agadol v'anoha. What is this thunder, this tremendous noise and drama, shahaya be'et matan Torah, which was then at the time of the giving of the Torah, especially since they're very straightforward concepts. So he reiterates the question that we had before. Why the drama if these are straightforward concepts that very likely people might be keeping anyway, rules like not murdering or honor your parents. These are certain things which have a certain universality in humanity. And he another point that the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Rebbe, said. But what the sages tell us in the Midrash, I think it's Yalkut Shimoni, Shabashah. When God's words, I am the Lord your God, when that word, those words emerged from the mouth of God, every single Jew, every single member of the Jewish people, he said, you know what? God is speaking to me. God is speaking to me. And that's why it's written, I think that's what the Midrash says in the Yalkut. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord thy God, we would say in Old English. Yours in the singular, right? In English, they used to have thy means you, one person, and you is you, many people. And so if we were translating into older English, we would write, I am the Lord thy God, in the singular. Similarly, all the other nine commandments, every one of them is addressing a person in the singular, you as an individual. But tzarich lavin ma'o inyan zeh, and we have to understand this idea, shahadibur medabeim kol echad ve'echad miYisrael, that God's sacred speech in the Ten Commandments is talking individually to every single Jew. Well, this actually reminds me of something Rabbi Sacks, Oliver Shalom. He said, the difference between a rabbi and a rebbe. A rabbi speaks to 500 people, and each one thinks he means the other person, not me. And the rebbe speaks to 5,000 people, and each one feels, he means me, he's talking to me. So on an infinitely greater level, we have at the giving of the Torah this sense that every person felt the Ten Commandments are coming from God directly to me. And so the Rebbe is presenting that to us, and that's going to be part of the discussion. Let's just stop over here and see if people are on board and if there are any comments. Sam, would you like
curious
to comment?
I was curious about what you're saying about a rabbi talks to people and if you feel they're talking to the person, the rabbi talks and you feel, he's talking to me. I was just wondering where that analogy comes from.
That's Jonathan Sachs's own perception, having been a rabbi.
No. And I think that's a profound observation, but I was just wondering what would the observation be if someone felt the opposite? So they felt when the rabbi talks, he's talking to me, and when the rabbi's talking, he's talking to everyone.
All right. So this is a thing Rabbi Sacks often would say. He presented this idea.
All right.
So any comment from anyone? Rabbi Lou, would you like to comment?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'll say something later, please, Don.
Okay. Sam, are you okay?
I'm okay, thank you. Yes, I'm nothing really to comment at the moment.
Okay. Okay, so let's go back into it. Right. Now, the discourse of 1884 of the Rebbe Rashab that the Rebbe has been quoting, lo nimtza beguf ktav yad kodesh hemshech hamaima. In the manuscript, which was written by the Rebbe Rashab, by the fifth Rebbe, the sacred manuscript, there is the continuation of the discourse. I don't know what is exactly there, but it seems that it's got this beginning that the Rebbe has outlined, but then that's as far as the manuscript goes. Presumably today the manuscript is printed, and we could look it up, but I didn't get round to doing that. But we can still understand how it might continue, as explained in other discourses by that same Rebbe Rashab, and also discourses before by previous Rebbeim, on which his discourse is based. B'drushei Admor HaTzemach Tzedek, the third Rebbe, V'Admor Emtzayi, the second Rebbe, V'Ad L'drushei Admor HaZaken. And back to the discourses of the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman. So you see, there's an amazing library at the background of all these Chabad teachings. And I regard it's a total miracle the way this library, or to a great extent, was rescued from the whole Holocaust and the Stalinist period, and it managed to be in its rightful place. It's in 770, next door to 770 is the library. And there are these hundreds of volumes of manuscript texts, which, thank God, It's a wonderful story in itself, how they were preserved despite all the horrors, and they managed most of them to be brought from Europe to America. There's still some in the library in Moscow, over which there is a very great argument between America and Russia, and certainly the Lubavitch movement and Russia, that those that it's not so much manuscripts as printed books, but it's part of the Lubavitch library, and it's still being kept illegally by the Russians, unfortunately. But thank God, all these manuscripts that he's spoken about here, and printed books of Hasidus, they all managed to come to the free world. So, in other words, the Rebbe is now giving the sort of the continuation of the discourse, even though it's not there in the Rebbe Rashab's writing, that particular text from 100 years before he said this discourse. Now, the basic theme of the explanation in all those teachings, the Inyan Matan Torah. What is Matan Torah? What is the giving of the Torah? Haya amshachata atzmut begalui. It was a revealing, it was a drawing down of the essence of the divine in a revealed way. Now, the Rebbe then has a caveat, kafish shayach inyana gilui ba'atzmut. So far that you can talk about revelation if you're talking about essence. Normally, revelation and essence are actually two opposites. That which is revealed is not the essence usually, and the essence is something hidden. But in this case of the giving of the Torah, the essence was in some sense revealed. The Inyan Zenifal b'matan Torah, and this was what the amazing thing that took place at the giving of the Torah. That was the absolutely cosmic event. It's not just about these laws. It was a cosmic event. Ki b'matan Torah niya bitul gzeira. There was a nullification of the decree. It's a kind of decree that was built into existence right from the beginning. The elyonim lo yedu letachtonim, that the upper realms should not descend to the lower realms. The tachtonim lo yalu leelyonim, and the lower realms should not ascend to the higher realm. In other words, the upper realm is spirituality. The lower realm is physicality. And the way in which human beings were cognizant of this aspect of life is that they are completely divided. For the Greeks, for example, they were very sensitive people. They understood that they're spiritual realms, but they saw it as completely separate from the physical. The spiritual and the physical didn't meet. And then comes the giving of the Torah. And the giving of the Torah means that suddenly the spiritual and the physical do meet. That's why in the Torah, like in general, you have laws of kashrut, which takes the whole idea of eating food, and eating food has a spiritual dimension to it, because when one is eating the food, one is keeping the laws of kashrut as a Jew. And similarly, in the Ten Commandments, for example, the law against adultery. So marriage becomes something holy. And because it's holy, adultery is forbidden, completely forbidden. So physical aspects of life suddenly become sacred aspects of life. And so this is what is happening here, that this decree separating the two dimensions of existence, the spiritual and the physical, that decree has, so to speak, been nullified. V'lachein nif'al az, and that's why that took place then, Inyan amshachata atzmut begalui, there was this flow of the essence of the divine in a revealed way, b'chol makom, everywhere. And now, when it says everywhere, I'm not sure whether that means all over the world or for every aspect of life of the Jewish people at that moment. So I'm not quite sure. Rabbi Lu, would you have a comment on that when it says v'chol makom, everywhere? What does it mean at that moment? You're still muted.
I think it means even in the lowest world. You see, somebody, if I can just digress a little bit, but I think it's on the subject. Somebody once asked me, not once, but I remember one particular time, what is special about the Jewish religion? Someone who was a 40-year-old who just found out he's Jewish 3 days before. And somebody invited me to meet him, intellectual. He said, what is special about the Jewish religion? He knows a lot about it. So I said, look, I'm not a student of religions. I don't know that much about ecumenical matters, but I think that every religion that I know of contains a spiritual aspect and an action. There's faith and there's actions. There's spirituality and there is things that you do. The things that you do are there to enhance your spiritual experience. They bring you to transport you to a state of being and a state of feeling, which is more spiritual. In the Jewish religion, the spiritual and the understanding is secondary to the practical, to actual doing it. In other words, the spiritual is there in order to enhance the action, but the main thing is the action. And he said, why should that be? And I said, because the whole reason that God created the world was that there should be a dwelling place in the lowest world. So this idea that if you're in an existence where there's the spiritual and there's the material, then the spiritual is higher than the material. It's more holy. It's more spiritual. It's got more feeling to it. That's how it is. Now to combine them both, it's not a natural thing to combine two things which really are opposites. In order to combine them, you need a power which transcends. God is not spiritual. God transcends everything, and He is through giving the Torah, He is showing us that the whole reason that I created everything is that the physical world of action should be a vehicle to express the will of God and the Spirit of God. So it's focused down below, not in order to elevate you. On the contrary, you should be elevated and have great studying and prayer experiences in order to bring it out into the world. That's what I'm saying. B'chol mokom, even down to the lowest world, there should be this essence of God.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. That's very meaningful. So since the goal of the giving of the Torah is the revelation and the expression of the essence of the divine everywhere, including the lowest level, therefore, the statements at the giving of the Torah, the Ten Commandments, are dvarim pshutim dafka, are specifically simple statements. Don't murder, don't commit adultery. Ki b'matan Torah chadra hamshachat ha'atzmut, as Rabbi Lu just said, at the giving of the Torah, the drawing down of the essence impregnated b'chol seda yishtal shalut, the whole of the Kabbalistic system of the down-chaining of worlds, it was all suffused with this quality of the essence of the divine. Gam bidvarim achi pshutim, including in the very simplest things. V'adarabah, and in fact, hamshachat ha'atzmut, the revealing of the essence, shayechet le'inyan hamata dafka, particularly relates to the lowest level of existence. B'makom tachton b'yoter, the place which is lowest, that there's nothing lower. as explained at length in a number of places, especially in the second Lubavitcher Rebbe's teachings, whatever starts off highest, whatever is higher, Yored lamata mata biyoter, descends even lower than anything else. So the thing that starts off higher descends lower. So an image that's often given is of a wall, and there's some bricks have fallen off the wall. So the brick that is like a third of the way up the wall, when it falls off the wall, it's quite near the wall. But the brick that is right at the top of the wall, when it falls off, it's further away from the wall. Or just in more general, that the thing that starts off higher is able to descend lower and lower. Vezel gamatam, and that's also the reason. The marsh in Yan Matan Torah, the reason why at the giving of the Torah, Hayabid Varin Shutim Dafka was with these simple sounding statements. Meshum Dam Sham Shachata Etzem, because the revealing of the essence, Hibidvarim Tahtonim Ubshitim Biyotem, is in things which are particularly, they are low in level and they are simple. Whether we're talking about the different worlds in general, and in which case we're talking about coming into the lowest world of which there's nothing lower, which is our world. And even when we consider this world in general, in itself, and look at the different details in this world, the very simplest things that are there in the world, the way a person behaves towards another person, not to murder, not to commit adultery, not to steal. The Yeshlama, one can suggest, the Zergam ke mash nema b'matan Torah, that this is also the meaning of what it says about the giving of the Torah that begins off, Vayedabe Elokim et kol advarim ha'ele lemo. God spoke all these words saying. Now, so there's a discussion. What is this word at the end of that phrase? Lemo, saying. The Yesh Lomar, Sheperush Lemo Kan, and one can suggest as the Rebbe, what does Lemo mean here? You see, the problem with Lemo, let me just explain the question. There are many verses which say God said something like God said to Moses, saying, and then comes the thing that he said. So the sages explain, what does it mean God said to Moses, saying? He said to Moses so that Moses should tell everyone else. So that makes sense, because normally Moses is the only one to hear the teaching from God, and then he says it to the Jewish people. But here, everyone is hearing it. So what does saying mean? And even if you say that God is telling the Jewish people these laws, and he's telling them, go into the future, tell the next generation, and let them tell the next generation with these 10 commandments, there's a problem with that as well, because there's a basic principle. All the Jewish souls which would ever be, including all the proselytes, they were all there at the giving of the Torah right at the beginning. So they all heard it. So what it's saying mean? So saying is understood as having additional meanings. And so one of the additional meanings here that the Rebbe is pointing out, Husha, this is line 20 on the second page. Who Shahagashmi, line 21, Shahagashmi Vahatachton Atzmo. That the physical thing, the thing which is at the lower level itself, Naaseh HaOmer, it becomes the one who says, Azoga in Yiddish. The lower dimension becomes itself a sayer, something which says the word of God. Mishum she'az haitam shachata atzmut mitzad inyano shel atachton. Because then, at the giving of the Torah, there was a flow of the essence enwrapped and enclosed and impregnating and integrating with that thing which is on the lowest level, that action, that part of life, which we might think is on the lowest level, but nonetheless, the essence of the divine is wrapped up in it. And that's what it means saying. That means that the lower dimension itself becomes something which says the word of God. So God says the Ten Commandments, and the Ten Commandments impregnate everything else, and everything then becomes, even at the lowest level, becomes something which says godliness. Well, I think that's a pretty powerful statement, actually. Let's just pause for a moment. That really is a very powerful statement over what the giving of the Torah is, that the world as a whole embraces these teachings of the divine and communicates those teachings onwards. So the world is, in itself becomes the expression of the divine teaching. It's, there's a saying from the previous Rebbe that when Mashiach comes, the physical world itself will, as it were, be animated. The stone in the pavement will say, hey, why are you walking on me if you're not saying words of Torah while you're walking on me? So that's one can take that much further. You know, the whole of existence, as it were, expresses the divine.
So maybe Lemor means to the whole nations of the world?
That's certainly a good explanation, Rivka. That's a good way of looking at it. And certainly the seven Noachad laws spring, even though some of them are written in the Torah before, but they spring from the giving of the Torah. So that is a nice way to express it. But a more mystical way is that existence itself is absorbing this teaching and is repeating it, and is reflecting it or repeating it. Jeffrey, there's something very peculiar about your video. Right, that looks a bit better. Okay, does anyone else have anything to say? Yep. Okay. Eve?
I was wondering whether it has to include as well.
Sorry? Say that again.
Existence has to include human beings as well. So that's almost a promise that people will be able to hear the voice.
I think that's very meaningful. I mean, ultimately, the teaching goes to every human being. The seven Noachad laws, which relate to every human being, emanate from the giving of the Torah, and they become part of the life of every human being outside the Jewish people, ideally.
You're positing that it only happened once, and that it's the laws. But in principle, what you've described couldn't happen any moment, or probably does happen every moment afresh.
I agree with you 100%. I think the giving of the Torah is a continuous process. That's why the blessing on the Torah is Noten HaTorah. He gives the Torah present.
Yeah. And, but then you can also hear new things, right?
There's the idea that when God and Moses, when Moses was on Mount Sinai, God communicated to him all the teachings of Torah that would ever be there. And so certainly there can be new things for us that suddenly appear new and we didn't realize it before. And it's suddenly emphasized by a particular teacher or leader who shows what is there within, you know, what is implicit within the Torah teachings that we didn't realize before.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Because I think that's the exciting part of it. You know, it's not the fact that it's going mechanical, that the world is, you know, going mechanically on the way it is in there. There's a sort of blueprint for its mechanical continuation. The idea that it's afresh every moment and can change course.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Well, it's fresh every moment, and changing course is the way it responds to situations and shows how the Torah applies in that situation, or how we should apply Torah in that situation.
Right. No, that's really exciting stuff.
Right, okay. Right. So now we're on line 24. V'zel v'chol ha'am ro'im. So that's what it means, all the people saw. V'ya ha'am v'yanu v'yamdu m'rachok. The people saw and they stood far off. Sh'ze ha'ya me'en kli la'am shachat ha'atzmut. This dramatic response and this dramatic experience of the people was a kind of vessel in which they can contain the essence. Right? Before we have our little shiurim here on the Aleph group, we try to have, whether it's sung or it's played by piano, you know, we try to have a melody. Now, why do we have the melody? Because we want to be receptive to something spiritual. These teachings are extremely spiritual. And when they were said, very often, when they were said in 770 by the Rebbe, there would be a special melody before the discourse. And it was awesome. Everyone knew there's going to be coming a discourse, and this very profound melody was sung, and people stood up, and there was such a tremendous sense of spiritual expectancy. So what the Rebbe is saying here is that the thunder and lightning and all the different, you know, scenic and dramatic aspects about Matan Torah, about the giving of the Torah, you know, which delighted Cecil B. DeMille when he made his film, The Ten Commandments. So all this helped prepare us to be a vessel. That's the Hasidic or Kabbalistic way of describing it, that we ourselves, or the Jewish people then, should be a vessel for the revelation of the essence. Dehine, because behold, line 26, Kedei shetiyam shachat ha'atzmut b'matan Torah, in order that the essence should be revealed, drawn down and revealed at the giving of the Torah. Hine av she'ein shayach. Now, even though it's not possible, Shiyah in Yam shall clean mamash, that there should literally be a vessel, Ela Atzmut, for the essence of the divine. The essence of the divine is infinite. How can you talk of having a vessel for it? Mikol makom, nonetheless, Sarish Shiyah me'ein achana, there still has to be some kind of preparation. Uchli, some sort of vessel, like in a metaphorical sense. A vessel as far as we human beings were concerned. El Gilui Atzmut, to the revelation of the essence. Al Yedei, so what is that preparation? Al Yedei Hasarat Ha'alamot Ha'esterim Ba'abilbilim. By this beautiful line. By removing the concealments, the hiddenness, and the confusion. You see, we look at the world and we don't see it properly. What we see is like curtains, we see veils, and we often see in a very confused way. But if someone is party to this radiance of the essence, this essence of the divine somehow being revealed in some way, it cuts through the concealments and the hiddenness. It even cuts through the confusion. As is explained in another place, quite a few other things. Be'inyan gimel b'chinut, b'chinot. There are three ways of understanding the function of itahuta de le'ele, the arousal from above. Now this theme, the arousal from above and the arousal from below. So we've got the arousal from below, which reaches to the arousal from below, and there's a whole process. It's really, it's an erotic process. The translated, it translates into erotic processes because that is the process in the divine. That's the way Hasidic teachings look at it. So because that's the way it is in the divine, that's how it's revealed in the, among people as one metaphor. Our lives are metaphors, as it were, for spiritual aspects. So there's, first of all, there's the ha'itaruta de la'ela, there's arousal from the above, ha'kodemet l'itaruta de la'tata, which comes before the arousal from below. So that arousal from above comes along. And let's say we're talking about God and the individual. So there's some kind of signal from God. Let's say it comes to a Jewish festival, it comes to Shabbat. I mean, that's already a spiritual event, which is there, that there is a Shabbat. Of course, we have to do something to make the Shabbat meaningful. But the first thing is, we're coming to the seventh day, and the seventh day is very spiritual. Let's take it seriously. So there's something from above. And then our taking it seriously, that is our response. And as a result of that response, we've got the second level. The second level of the arousal from above. We then have a second kind of arousal from above, which comes about through the arousal from below. So in other words, we know it's coming to Shabbat. So we start getting organized, and Shabbat's very spiritual. We learn a discourse in preparation so that we can think about while we're praying on Shabbat. And you know what? As a result of that, we have a beautiful experience while we're praying on Shabbat, or the whole Shabbat experience, lighting candles and so on. It's something absolutely beautiful. So our effort put in causes a greater response, as it were, from the divine. And then, Vayitaruta de la'ele shulamayla mitaruta de la'tata. Then there's a third kind of arousal from above, which is higher than anything we could do. It's something completely from beyond. It's not a result of our spiritual prayer. It's something which is completely beyond, but nonetheless, it manifests itself. The only thing is, and here he says an interesting thing in line 5 and 6, Eile shekutsha berichu lo sharia, Eile ba'atashlim. God cannot dwell in a place unless that place is whole. It's whole, it's wholesome. Yeah, if two people have an argument at the Shabbat table, they're not just doing something bad against each other, they're spoiling the Shabbat atmosphere. So when there is a wholesome, positive, beautiful, loving Shabbat atmosphere in every way, then there's the beautiful peace and reality of Shabbat. So that's like, the third level, which it's out of reach, but by making the right environment, it's there, hopefully. That means in order there should be this arousal from above, it means that the place to which that flow is coming should be whole. It's not that it draws it, because that level of the arousal from above is too exalted. It can't be drawn down. But we can make a place which is fit where it might express itself. That means that arousal from above is connected with this particular place. And that's a very spiritual concept. And so now coming back to our the whole idea of the giving of the Torah, when we speak on a higher level, we're talking about the expression of the essence, right? We've gone beyond the arousal from above. We're talking about something, in a sense, many steps beyond this revelation of the essence. Also for this, there has to be removing of the concealment and the hiding and the confusion. Because God will only dwell in a whole place, in a place which is whole. And that's what we have to be looking for in our lives, this place which is whole, where the divine can dwell. And this is what it meant, that the people saw all these dramatic phenomena, v'yanu, and they were shaken, v'yamdu merachok, and they stood far back, they were frightened. But that being frightened is actually a very, very positive thing. It meant that they became, in some sense, that whole person, which is able to receive the essence of the divine in some sense. Okay, so are there any questions on that? That was quite a heavy little piece, very beautiful. Sam?
Yeah. Robert, could you say a bit more about what it means to say that something is like whole, so that it can be like receive?
It's a very interesting concept, and it's not one which is defined very clearly, but it means, you know, if everything is appropriate and is right, and one has put in one's own personal effort, and then it's possible that you know, they're like further dimensions of experience, of revelation, of it's really a very spiritual idea, and that's how I understand it. I'm not sure if Rabbi Lu is here. Rabbi Lu is in the middle of Sheva Brachot for one of his granddaughters, so it was nice he was able to be with us briefly. But it's a very, very spiritual concept of getting things to the sort of right pitch, and then there are further steps. But at the same time, you know, one shouldn't be looking for these further steps. it's not in terms of simple experience, but maybe in terms of a person's life. You know, as life goes on, one puts certain things in place with the help of God, and then with the help of God, things work out in this way and in that way. And the, you know, so one makes a fitting receptacle, one makes something whole and wholesome. And from that, there's a sort of it's a process which, although it's not one-to-one, you know, you can't say because the person did that, then something else happened. But it's having that sort of appropriate approach to life in terms of Torah teaching brings about, you know, is wholesome and brings about further dimensions of wholesomeness. That's what I would attempt to say.
Could you give an example of what, like what someone could do to make something like wholesome?
Well, I mean, the basic example is all the laws, the itsy bitsy laws, you know, the customs of Torah. and seeing them as creating a beautiful environment in one's heart and in one's being and in one's home, that becomes a receptor for positive spiritual things in a very meaningful way.
I think in Birkat HaMazon, there is something which says it. And you say, "Haman uita Torah totova otobe libenu, ותהיה יראתנו על פענינו לבית נחיתה, ויהיו כל מעשינו לשם שמיים." So maybe this is it. To connection all the time, הקדוש ברוך הוא, כל מעשינו לשם שמיים.
Right, so what Rivka is saying, thank you, Rivka, that it says in Birkat HaMazon, the idea of a person having this connection with God, so that all the time, whatever they do is for the sake of heaven. There are different phrases which doing something for the sake of heaven, that although it might be a physical or even a pleasurable thing, but one is doing it for the sake of heaven. And not only that, it could be behold rachecha da'eu. You know God in all your ways. So that when doing something which might be personally very meaningful and satisfying, but it goes beyond that, it's actually a way of knowing God. And that's a kind of a mind expanding process, that we discover ways of thinking about different aspects of life, that they are ways of knowing God. Does that help? Sam, does that help?
Yes, that does help. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Now, so line 15. By Inyan Yuvan, now the Rebbe is referring to another discourse by the Rebbe Rashab, said much later in his life. We began off with one set in 1884, and now it's one which is in 1915. So, Va'in and Yuvan, this will be understood. In a discourse with the same beginning with the same words, all the people could see, of the year 1915. And it's part of a long stream of discourses, a famous stream, which began in 1912. Now, this is a very subtle concept. Before any existing thing, Sarish liot ahead, there has to be a lack, as it were. Like the idea of Tzimtzum, which Rabbi Isaac Luria taught, that there's a concealment of God, but that concealment is Shubishvila Gilui, is for the sake of the revelation of the divine, ultimately through the whole process of creation. And that's also the meaning of this fear and trembling al yidei kolot, through the thunder and the lightning Torah, at the giving of the Torah. That's why the people were shaken, they stood far off. They were frightened. So that is something in itself negative. Shazel ahead, that's the lack. The fear is like the lack, hakodem el havaya, which comes before the being, the positive being. Kedei shiyu bifchinat bitul, so that they should be abnegated. Sheyuchlu lekabel et gilui ha'atzmut, so that they should be able to receive the revelation of the essence, b'matan Torah, the giving of the Torah. And this concealment, this lack, who are chanavakli, that itself is the vessel, laham shachata etzem, for the essence to be revealed and flow into them. Shahu ahavaya amitit, because the essence is the true existence. So it's by having a lack on one level of existence, makes us a vessel for a positive flow of the ultimate essence of everything. Now, this is a very heavy idea. He's going to give a sort of practical example of it. So let's take that example and then we'll try to discuss it if we can. And he explains in this stream of discourses, this wonderful, famous thing beginning in 1912. It's sometimes just called Ayin Bet, which means 12, like the 12 of 1912. Or five, it's, I mean, the Hebrew number, it's 5,672, which corresponds to 1912 after January. Now, so he continues in this amazing stream of discourses. The Inyan Ze Kashur Gamim HaGalut HaAchron. This also relates to our final galut, our final exile. Ikvada, the Mashiach, which is the heels of the Messiah. The Hashem, that's us today. I mean, he was talking in 1915, but it applies to us over 100 years later. Just as at the time of the going out of Egypt and the giving of the Torah. The Matan Torah, as a preparation for the revelation of the giving of the Torah, there had to be something negative coming beforehand. There had to be the concealment, the Hester and the hiding, the Galut Mitzrayim of the exile in Egypt. In order, it's saying here, in order to get the great revelation of the giving of the Torah, there had to be the great concealment of being in Egypt. Shehu inyan ha'heder ha'kodem la'havaya. That is the lack, as he explains in his discourses of 1915, that this is the concealment which comes before the actual tangible positive being. And al derech zehu b'torato shel Mashiach. There's a similar idea when we think to the teachings of Torah, the teachings of Torah that Mashiach will teach, which is pnimiyut ha-Torah, the inner dimension of Torah. Shehachana eleya, and the preparation for it, comes about through the concealment and the lack and the problems of all the exiles. Especially this last exile, when we're on the footsteps of Mashiach. And this is the longest exile, and it's the bitterest exile. And this is lack, deficiency on the most intense level. And therefore, through it we come to the true expression of godliness, which is the true and complete redemption, which is not followed by any exile afterwards. The atam and the reason, there's no exile after it, it's impossible that there should be a worse exile, mina galut hazeh, worse than the one we're in. We are in an exile which saw the Holocaust, which saw terrible, terrible things. And earlier than the Holocaust, there was Khmelnytsky, and there were And after the Holocaust, there was Stalin in Russia, and there were all kinds of negative things. And at this moment, there are a lot of negative things. So that is the preparation. That darkness is the preparation for an ultimate revelation of light, of light. And therefore, the redemption, Ha-havaya, the positive existence, al yado, which will come about through this, he geula she'ein lemala hemena, is a redemption of which there's nothing higher than it. V'hi ratzon she'yukuyam zeh b'karov mamash, be God's will, that all this should take place very quickly. V'viat Mashiach tzidkenu, with the coming of the righteous Mashiach, and he'll bring us upright to our land. V'na'areinu v'zikneinu, with our young people, with our old people, v'vaneinu, with our sons, v'vnoteinu, with our daughters, all as Moses said to Pharaoh, v'v'nheiru b'yameinu mamash, and very quickly in our days.
Amen.
Well, I really think this is a very amazing discourse. I'm going to turn off the recording now.